The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I think I haven't been here for a couple of Mondays. Is that right? If someone knows? And it feels a little bit awkward because last time I was here, I gave a talk on anger, which is meant to be part of a series of talks on emotions and practice of mindfulness around emotions. And I finished the talk on anger. I thought, well, I have more to say, more to explore around anger. So that we'll, I think I might even say next week we'll talk more about anger. But now it's 2 or 3 weeks later. And I want to fulfill my promise. But it seems kind of distant, the first talk on anger now. So anger is a very interesting emotion because in Buddhist circles, anger often gets a bad rap or has a bad reputation. And Buddhists are supposed to be kind, compassionate, peaceful, equanimous, non-reactive, non-attached, all these wonderful qualities. And so then you shouldn't be angry. And so then what happens in some Buddhist circles is that anger grows underground in Buddhist culture, because you're not supposed to express it, you're not supposed to be angry, so it becomes kind of sometimes a shadow of Buddhist groups, and which is often the case whenever there's an ideal. People don't want to express the opposite of the ideal, and so they kind of, that side of them kind of gets pushed off or ignored or not paid attention to or not acted on or not expressed or not admitted. And I think it's inevitable that any culture that has an ideal, which I suppose is any culture, is going to have a shadow side around that ideal. That which we don't want to look at or notice so much because it's the function of a practice, a spiritual practice, a mindfulness practice, to help bring the what's in the shadow out into the light. So it's not a fault of any culture to have a shadow. It just comes with the territory, comes with any culture. But one of the important functions of a meditation practice or mindfulness practice is to help draw that out and show it to us so we can take that into account and be wise about it, as opposed to just leaving it there. So in that regard, I think it's often good for Buddhists to take a look at anger. Now, one of the first interesting Buddhist approaches to anger is to notice when anger has the upper hand and when we have the upper hand. So even before any judgments about whether you should be angry or if anger is good or bad or whatever, who's in charge of you? Is your anger in charge of you, or, you know, are you in charge? And so if somehow you're being pushed around by the anger is creating a very powerful filter through which you're interpreting your world inaccurately, or a very powerful fuel for motivations which are not healthy, or the anger, even if the anger is appropriate anger and the motivation for the anger is good, you're really in its grips. It's really, you don't have any real control over it, and just pushing you along and you acting it out, sometimes with the belief that you're in charge, but you're not really. And one of the great ways to find out who's in charge is to meditate. Because you sit down to meditate and you kind of try to hold your mind mindfully present in the present moment. For example, keep it present on your breathing, and you find that you can't do it because the mind has a mind of its own. The mind has very strong agendas and concerns, preoccupations that takes you away. And you sit down to meditate and the anger, for example, comes back with a vengeance, and you spend 15 minutes of the meditation period or 45 minutes of the meditation period rehearsing the situation, planning your actions, what you're going to do, thinking about it, all that, then, you know, as far as you could tell, you didn't breathe at all during the whole 45 minutes. It wasn't, you know, you have no evidence of it since you weren't paying attention. So so you find out in meditation, it's one of the great values of meditation, is to notice what the preoccupations of the mind are, the unresolved issues of the mind, and really, are you in the grips of those concerns, or are you free of them? It's fine to have concerns and to engage in them and reflect on them, but a free person who is free should be able to put them down freely when it's appropriate and pick them up when it's appropriate. So then we become interested in exploring this topic of who's in charge. And one of the things we're trying to do when we do mindfulness practice is to let mindfulness be in the forefront. Mindfulness or investigation or curiosity, interest. What is this? What's going on here? Let me notice more carefully what's happening. So with anger, if we're able to step back from the anger and ask ourselves, what is this? And get interested and start looking, then we're doing mindfulness. If we can't step back, but we stay in the fray, you know, and start to keep thinking about it and kind of keep getting lost in the thoughts and concerns and the feelings, then, you know, the mind's interest stays interested with the topic that we're angry about or the situation or the people. But if we so without judging the anger as being bad or wrong or anything, the switch in mindfulness is to switch from living in the anger, being involved in the anger, to investigating the anger, being mindful of the anger. And that switch is a very significant switch in the mind. The neurologists say that it's a different function in the mind that's operating when we're caught up in boiling in anger versus we're kind of, you know, investigating and watching and being mindful of it. And it's that functioning of the mind that can watch and see that we're trying to develop when we're doing mindfulness practice, because it gives us much more freedom in how we're going to live our life. It also gives us much more wisdom because we can see more clearly as a result. So then in mindfulness, we become interested to explore what anger is, to investigate it. And what I said, I think, 2 weeks ago is that anger deserves investigation, because anger is not a single thing. It's not like just anger that's done with, you know, I understand it. Anger is a kind of umbrella term under which we include a lot of different emotions. And sometimes it can simply be strong displeasure. It can be a fierce protective no. Sometimes it can be an act of hostility, animosity. And there's a big range. There's a huge difference between a strong expression of displeasure, which I think is completely appropriate. Some things are very unpleasant. Or a strong fear saying no. On one hand, versus hatred, hostility, animosity on the other. And generally, in Buddhist English, this will save you a lot of problems as you negotiate Buddhist English. When Buddhists use the word anger, you should probably best translate it in your mind to mean the kind of anger that is hostile, that has animosity in it. If you know of a kind of anger that has no hostility, no hate, no animosity, no ill will in it, then probably the Buddhists aren't talking about that. Unless you're caught by it. If you're caught by it, then we want to become free of it. But we don't make a negative valuation of it, or that's bad. What's bad, or in Buddhist language, what's unhealthy, is the kind of anger that is has hostility in it. So then a lot of the statements that Buddhists make about anger that can seem like it's negative judgments of anger make much more sense if we remember they're talking about hostility. Does that make sense? Is this helpful? And so, are there other forms of anger? You know, that's up to you to decide. But you know, some strong displeasure expression can just, without hostility, could be sometimes called anger. One of the interesting things about most forms of anger is it seems that it's primarily a social emotion, meaning that it arises in social settings. So, I mean, sometimes you can be angry with nature. you know, that tree just fell on my car. You know, it can happen that way. But generally anger, especially when we get caught up in the anger or stuck in the anger, it usually has to do with people or our relationships. Sometimes with ourselves. We have a wonderful relationship with ourselves sometimes. And there can be anger there. Sometimes it's towards God, people who believe in God. And that's also, you know, social relationship then. And we have. And what's interesting, and so there's a great example given by Chuang Tzu, the Chinese poet, philosopher, of if you're out on a like in a sailboat on a lake, and suddenly there's a boat that comes bearing down at you or something, it's the middle of the lake, and it runs into you. If there's someone at the helm of the boat, it's common enough to get angry at that person. Weren't you watching and looking where you're going? You should have been paying attention. But if no one's in the boat, and just drifting, then there might be some anger. How could they have left that the boat go drifting? But there tends not to be anger then, in the same kind of way. Oh, just a boat floating. And maybe I should have been paying more attention. And so the anger doesn't go so quickly towards the people. So that example I use to point to the social aspect of it. The people are involved. And that means that there's often a more complicated evaluation, judgments, interpretations, ideas present that is interpreting a situation where we've gotten angry. If a tree falls on my car, I might be angry for a little while, but I'm not going to, you know, hold resentment towards trees. But if my neighbor runs over my car, then I might, especially if it was intentional, you know, then I might have some anger for a while with my neighbor, you know, and have to work through that for a while and sit down and talk and have a social kind of process to work through it. I don't sit down with a tree. So why this is important is that often anger occurs through the filter or through the means of interpretations, values that we have. It's not so often that anger happens just, I mean, anger can be very quick and sudden. But a lot of the anger that people carry around with them and hold them is happening through the presence of a lot of other things as well. So we can ask, and we do this in mindfulness, what else is, what's prompting the anger? What are the conditions and causes for the anger? Not just to leave it as a single thing, oh, you're just anger and that's the way it is, and I'm right. But what are the causes and conditions? What's the wider kind of causes and conditions, beliefs, ideas, feelings, motivations, events that are kind of behind all this and this being there? So it means that with anger, I think it's often useful to step back and not only learn how to be mindful of anger in the moment, but also to live a reflective life, or to use the mindfulness to explore and think, remember, oh, what was going on there, and what do I believe, and what was present in me, how was I looking at my neighbor, what was my thoughts, what was my history there, how do I expect neighbors to treat each other, you know, there's a lot of things you could look at and try to understand. And not a few times in my life has my anger gone away when I received new information about the situation. And my anger was dependent on a certain way of seeing an event, but when I found out other aspects of the event that I hadn't known, I realized, oh, there's no reason to be angry, and it goes away. So part of this investigation, stopping, stepping back and looking at the anger, is beginning to question, what is it? What all is going on here? To try to understand it. And in Buddhist practice, one of the things we're most interested in, maybe not, there's other very important things, but one of the, from the point of view of Buddhist practice itself, one of the things we're very interested in is, if I'm caught by the anger, if I'm attached to it, what is the hook? What is the reason that I'm caught for it? And there might be a whole series of things that the reasons why I get caught or trapped by it or resistant to it or afraid of it or feel like I should act on it right away or somehow in its grip. Just being justified, being afraid, being hurt, being threatened are all kind of things that come into play when anger has arisen. And so we stop and look. So again, from the point of view of Buddhist practice, we're interested in why we're caught by it. And that's a different investigation than the investigation of who's right. Now, if you're interested in who's right, that might be important sometimes to understand that, you know, who did what and who should apologize or something. But it has its place. But what I found a lot of, a strong kind of value in Buddhist cultures often is to first look and look and see what is my responsibility here, or what am I doing that gets me caught in it, gets me hooked or attached to that anger, and then to understand that, and then once that's understood, then perhaps go and try to talk to the person. If something needs to be addressed in the world, then address it. One of the things that, one of the traps, again, I think of a Buddhist practice or Buddhist culture sometimes that I've seen, is that sometimes Buddhists work too much on themselves. And, which, you know, it's a beautiful thing to work on oneself, but then they kind of, they take all the responsibility, or at least if I just kind of figure out how to let go deeply enough and resolve this, I can just sit and be quiet and equanimous and just sit there while they heap abuse on me. So you can go too far that way, just look at yourself. But still, for many people who aren't so deeply involved in Buddhism, that's usually not their fault. So just be as a little warning, you know, there's a very important place for engaging the world. So I wanted to ask you some questions about anger and see if we can get a list of interesting lists out of those. What are some of the reasons, both healthy and not healthy, why someone might believe it's not okay to be angry or to express the anger? What are some of the reasons? So to be angry can inflict injury and do harm to others. So therefore it should be important, it's important not to act on the anger or to express it. Okay? What are the reasons? Yes?
In my family, expressing my anger is like opening Pandora's box to everything else that's going on wrong in the family.
So you wouldn't want to express anger because then you have to take in everything else. So much more follows, and it's dangerous, it's frightening, it's challenging, it's time-consuming, it's loud. Okay, good. So just life is simpler if you're not angry. Yes. At home, it's a precursor to violence.
Physical violence, and at work, it's considered unprofessional and non-productive.
So at home, there's a possibility of violence if anger is expressed, and at work, it seems to be non-productive. Okay.
Hello. Yeah, it could have some unhealthy effects like raised blood pressure, you know, things like that over a long time.
Unhealthy effects of blood pressure, a variety of things can happen there with unhealthy.
people won't like me.
Ah, if I express my anger, then people won't like me. And so that was, you know, as I've told many people here before, that was a big challenge for me for a while. It was, I had a neurotic obsession to have everyone like me. And life is really hard if you want everyone to like you. And so I guess that would be some kind of fear, right? Fear that people won't like me if I express the anger, and I get rejected, and I have no friends, and I just have to stay home alone. And yes, please.
Expressing anger can be a way of creating the anger and building it.
So expressing anger reinforces the anger, and it can get stronger and bigger. It can create a habit of anger. It can create a real situation. Maybe it wasn't real to begin with. It was your imagination, and then now it's a full-blooded war.
Nice and good little children, boys and girls, just aren't angry.
Ah, so if you're going to be a good person,
yes,
a worthy person, a nice person, an acceptable person in the eyes of our society, then you wouldn't be angry. Yeah, okay, we'll do Mary here, and then we'll go back.
Along those lines, I think that when the little girls in particular grow up, I think women in particular are socialized to still be nice and sweet, and expressing anger runs counter to that.
So little girls, when they grow up, are still socialized to be sweet and not express that anger. So back here somewhere.
I might embarrass myself.
You might embarrass yourself.
Yeah, I get angry about something where I don't know everything that's going on, and I storm in, I'm all angry, and I look like an idiot.
Uh-huh, okay. Yes?
I might do something I might regret.
Sorry?
I might do something that, or say that I'll regret. Control and something will work out.
Interesting. So you're afraid that you'll regret what you do, so you blurt something out. So that holds the anger back then. So if you knew that you could be really skillful in how you expressed your anger, so you would never have any regrets, then maybe you would do it?
Maybe.
Okay. Yes, please.
My understanding is that in Buddhism, it's not so much whether it's okay or not to be angry, but the simple fact that if you're angry, you're suffering.
So there might be suffering involved with anger. And so that's a good point. So if there's hostility, then I think there's suffering. But sometimes there's, you know, the fierce no. You know, it's not so pleasant actually at home sometimes when I tell my son, no. No, you cannot play with the matches. And, you know, I sometimes, you know, that hasn't been the thing I have to do, but sometimes I have to be kind of fierce. And it's not really pleasant for me, but it would be wrong for me to avoid that discomfort just because it's uncomfortable. Anyway, it's a good point. I'm just kind of went off on it tangentially. So, someone else? Yes, please.
I've always been afraid that I would lose control.
So fear of losing control. Right. Yeah, fear of losing control. Fear of what I'm going to do.
And a follow-up on that is losing control means exhausting my energy source. It just wipes me out for days.
So losing control and exhausting one's energy source to be wiped out for days. It's pretty dramatic. One of the things to lose control of also, and one of the reasons some people are afraid of expressing their anger, is they're not afraid of losing control. They're afraid of the others losing control. And then there's huge consequences that can go on for days or lifetimes. Yes?
I think sometimes if you're angry, it clouds your perception of things. You start seeing things different from as they really are.
Okay, so if you're angry, it clouds your perception. You don't see things as they are. Yes, Matt? You speak loudly, I can...
Okay. I think, like, in the past, when I was not good and angry, so there's some kind of momentum in my life where I'd be more likely to be angry in the future.
So if you... So if you start acting on anger, it creates momentum, or you're more likely to act on anger in the future. It creates a habit and or tendency disposition. Yeah. Yes.
I sometimes don't do it because I feel like it doesn't work, and not only does it not work, but that it just feeds the whole, like, I mean, I get caught in this thing where I'm the angry person, and it kind of, I feel like it feeds the whole system, and if I act that out, then it just, you know, it just kind of reinforces the whole, you know, ecology of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. And so if I might say one, so sometimes I've had this strong voice at home, strong no, you know, that maybe a little bit too much so, and I didn't realize it until, you know, I sometimes had a strong no to my older son, and then I realized it was effective, so it did work. But then, at some point, like a few weeks later, my younger son tried to use the same voice on his brother. And I realized, oh no. You know, it might have worked in the moment, but look at the consequences down the line. And that's one of the problems. Sometimes anger can be effective in the moment, but sometimes it's a tremendous cost that is not worth it in the long term. Yes?
So I just wanted to follow that up with, like, I feel like anger can be good in identifying that there's an issue or a problem. But taking a step back and not letting it overpower you, which I think meditation can help with, can give you a way of finding a solution and finding a way of expressing that to someone else without overpowering them with that anger or, like, making them, like, retaliate. And just, like, also realizing you might have your own issues, but other people also have theirs, and trying to act in compassion with that.
Yeah, beautiful. And I think it's a useful attitude or a policy towards anger. Is that anger is always a sign of a grievance. Of a grievance. And as
a fear.
What?
Or a fear.
Or, well, a grievance, fear of a grievance, you know. So, or say it in a different way. I think it's a useful policy, I found, to always see anger as a signal. And it might not be, it might be a wise signal, it might be not wise, it might be based on something real, it might be based on something imaginary. But it's always a signal that deserves attention. So if it's real, if the threat is real, or the hurt or the injustice is real, then we can investigate and see it better. If what's being threatened is our narrow, self-centered, egotistical image of ourselves, you know, how could they have threatened me that, you know, so we can get angry. But it's a signal that not so much that we need to understand or write something in the world, but rather it's a signal that we have to look more deeply in ourselves. What are we holding on to? What are we attached to? So I think what you said is so important, I want to kind of say it again in my words, is that I think it's useful to think of anger as always a signal, as a symptom that deserves our attention. So the idea of switching from being caught by the anger to investigating the anger with respect and care is a very important thing. And not to assume automatically that the anger is bad or wrong. I would suggest that the approach of mindfulness is not to judge the anger. Is it good or bad, or shouldn't be there or should be there, but to really look at it. And one of the skills of mindfulness is hopefully the skill of learning how not to be caught by the anger or pushed around by it. So maybe it looks from the outside, maybe you could stay kind of calm or collected a little bit or some presence of mind. So you're not going to act on it in unwise ways. But so that you can look at it more carefully. Anyway, so someone else, I saw their hands. Yes?
When you said earlier that you make the switch from being caught up in it to being kind of an observer on what's happening, how exactly do you do that?
Yes.
After you
Well, first thing is you have to want to. And you have to want to enough. Because you can kind of want to, but the mind really wants to do something else. Throttle the guy. So you have to want to. And that counts for a lot. And then asking the question, what's going on here? And be curious. Just ask that question and kind of look whatever way you can. Is helpful. One of the things that I find it's over and over in many situations useful is to come back into the body and explore how does it feel in the body. Because the body is not a story. The body is in a kind of more present moment experience of it. And there's a lot of information in the body that's present moment time of what's going on. It helps us to kind of ground ourselves in the body and not be so caught in the thoughts and ideas. Chances are that if you're angry, they're really kind of caught up in something cognitive, some ideas. So the body can be a great kind of support to come back and feel here. But the story we make is also important. And so sometimes we need to kind of spend some time with the ideas, the story, the beliefs that are operating. And so how do you engage those without being lost in them and caught up in them? And sometimes, making an inventory. What do I believe here? I believe X, 1, 2, 3. Just kind of making an inventory creates a little bit more distance from it than actually living in the beliefs. Exploring what some of the other emotions that are present might be helpful. What else is going on here? So, for example, I think of resentment as a variation of anger. I think of resentment as frozen anger, so meaning we're kind of locked in on it. But I think so oftentimes resentment comes with other emotions as well. And the recipe of what are the ingredients that it mixed together to make resentment? And sometimes I've wondered whether it also requires a sprinkling of sadness and fear and anger together, perhaps. And there are probably other things as well. Self-righteousness. So that's some things. So what are some other reasons why a person might not feel it's okay to be angry? Yeah.
I think sometimes expressing anger may seem unfair to some people because they don't feel it's unpleasant and they don't feel like they have any responsibility, in experience that unpleasantness because they have no role in your anger.
So it can be experienced as unfair by other people. And then a little bit kind of somewhat connected to that is sometimes people are afraid of their own anger because they're afraid that they're going to roll over to other people. They're afraid if I'm angry, I'm not only going to hurt people, but I'm going to dominate people in a way that is frightening. And one of the interesting phenomena I've seen is that the people who've told me that some of the most common people who tell me that they're afraid of the strength of their own anger. They're afraid they're going to dominate people or something like that. tend to be people who, on the surface at least, seem to be very timid. And so I don't know exactly what the connection is, but... Yes, please.
I fear that that my anger will only be seen as the symptom, as the emotion, and that so when I'm angry, I won't be seen for what it is that, for me, for what it is that I'm trying to say, that it'll just be the anger or the emotion that's focused on.
Beautiful, beautiful. So people will focus on the emotion and not look at the real issues. They'll get distracted by it and say, you're just being emotional, and it just dismisses you like that and feel disrespected. You're great. That's a very important point. Yes?
Sometimes it's not my place and bad things can happen. If I get angry at my boss, he can fire me.
So if I get angry at my boss, he might fire me. Yes?
Expressing anger, I feel, might show my weakness. I'm not strong enough to overcome it.
So if we're angry, we show our weakness, and that I wasn't strong enough to overcome it. And so we don't want to show ourselves as being weak. So we'll show an exterior that we're fine. It's nothing, no problem at all. While it's inside, we're fuming. Yes?
anger can be cathartic, and there can be a lot of sadness and other painful feelings underneath. So you might be afraid of whatever it is that the anger will unleash that's underneath the
so
anger.
Once you turn to the anger and look at it and either release it or investigate it, it isn't just the family. Like Pesha said, the whole family dynamics, this Pandora box opens in the family, but it might be your Pandora's box.
Right.
The deeper feelings and emotions that are hard to look at. Yeah, okay. Yes.
Because you're only asking why people don't want to express anger.
Yeah.
Why are you asking that question? Why aren't you asking why do people want to express anger? Are we all people that want?
I was interested in the reason I asked that question was interesting. I was interested to find out what the inhibitions were from people have in feeling anger. And so I said both the healthy and unhealthy versions, so we got the whole range. I was actually most interested in the unhealthy reasons why people hold back or inhibit their emotions. And maybe I should have asked just that. But I thought maybe, well, then I decided maybe it's better to hear the whole range, which is kind of interesting.
But you didn't talk about feeling, you talked about expressing.
Expressing, feeling, well, did I my mind, in my mind it was... Okay.
You could feel a lot that you don't express at all.
Okay.
So a lot of the reasons people were giving were they're feeling anger but they don't express it because. And so it's a very good investigation about should we feel it.
How should we feel it? And one of the reasons why I asked the question also is what's a little bit on my mind, and is that in that it's a social emotion. How society treats its members affects how people get angry and how people feel about their anger. And one of the phenomena in, I think, all societies that I've been seeing around is that sometimes the people have reasons to be angry, relatively innocent reasons to be angry. I mean, like, you know, people treat each other pretty bad. So people who are kind of the oppressed, if they express anger, they're told, oh, that's your problem. You have a problem. You're the one who's kind of, you know, crazy or off or something. And so then they get marginalized even more for it. And so it gets harder and harder to express it until it gets bottled up and gets quite strong. And it's something to look at. I mean, it happens in families. It happens in communities, it happens in societies, it happens between all kinds of people. And sometimes you see in societies where the people who are oppressed are sometimes will turn around and oppress others. So what is a social role, social of beliefs to look at society as a whole, I think is a very important part of anger. And that was kind of what was behind why I wanted to give this talk, and I didn't say it very well here. There's a very strong tendency in Buddhism to look at anger as a practice issue that we look within ourselves and investigate ourselves in some deep way. I think that it's also very important to look at what goes on in interpersonally between people and groups and society, to actually notice the injustice that's there, to notice what's wrong and who's being oppressed, and that people have, in a sense, good cause to be angry. Maybe anger is not a useful way of righting the wrong, but it's helpful to stop and look at it and respect it, so that people aren't dismissed for how they are. That when other people are angry, that's also a symptom or a sign or a signal that something needs attention. And then if we're part of the system where someone's angry, to offer our respect. Another whole approach to tonight that I thought about was not to talk about anger, your anger, but to talk about mindfulness and being on the receiving end of anger, which I think would have been a very interesting topic. And then finally, I had one more point, and I apologize. I hope you're not angry with me. for jumping around, and you know, it's such a big topic. And as I was thinking about it today, I just kind of, my mind was swimming with all this stuff, and I said, "Oh no." So, but the last thing I want to say is that it's interesting to explore the role of being powerless with being angry. Powerlessness and anger. So if in the situation you're in, you feel like you have no power or no ability to act on it to make a change, does that tend to increase your anger or decrease it? And I suspect that it tends to more often increase it. And actually, so part of the, besides to investigate anger and start looking at it, and all the different pieces of it and the cause and conditions of it and what fuels it and what, you know, adds fire to it, I think the idea that we don't know, we feel powerless, we don't know what to do, we can't effectively institute a change, is a very important part of why people get angry. If people knew, oh, if I just said X, then it'll all be fine, you know, there's not much, often not so much cause or reason to be much very angry. But because we feel powerless with ourselves, we're angry with ourselves, angry with our family, angry with our society, angry with the government, angry with ever. And this idea of powerlessness is a very important one to look at and understand in this regard as well. So, in these two talks I've given about anger, I've made many points. One of the points I'd like to repeat as I end now is we want to respect our anger and not. Not the idea of good of anger and bad anger is not so helpful. Healthy anger and unhealthy anger is a helpful point of view. But even if it's unhealthy, it deserves our respect. And respect comes from the Latin parts of the word, meaning to look again. So may you learn how to look, and in the looking, be free of the anger. Thank you.